I don't know that it's possible that the NFL be as brave as what he has been to come out so close to the combine and the individual workouts and the NFL draft in May. Really a remarkable story, and the timing of it as well is really remarkable. If you think about this, we've had former NFL players who have come out after they played here, including Asera Tuaolo, who played a bit in Jacksonville years ago as a backup defensive lineman. We've had Jason Collins recently, who is not on a team in the NBA, but still looking for work in the NBA, come out. We've had an MLS player who's come out on the field. But this, you know, in football, which you have to say is the manliest of manly sports in the United States, has never had a player be gay, openly gay, while he was playing. And it's interesting to hear some of the comments from scouts and GMs who have been quoted anonymously, typically, on this, who said, oh, yeah, that was kind of known. It does take me back, though, about 12 or 13 years ago, we were sitting preparing for our coverage of the NFL draft. And the morning of the draft, we got word through some sources that there were two players who were projected to be top 10 or 12 picks in the draft who were who were rumored to be gay. And as we went through the draft, both of those guys dropped from where we expected them to go. There were teams that were passing on them. And
well, do you think that will happen with Michael Sam? A lot has changed in a decade.
Yeah, and part of this is to say, where should he be drafted based on his play and his merits? Terrific college player, a little undersized to play defensive end of the NFL, is about 6'1", 260, which, you know, is a little small, not terribly small, but a little smaller than the ideal. Could he make the transition outside linebacker, potentially? But a lot of folks are saying, you know, he's maybe a third-round pick, but probably more likely fourth-round kind of grade on him, and some of this is still fluctuating based on individual workouts and the combine and so forth. So I think if we had gone through this whole process, then he'd come out after he'd done all this work, we might have a little better feeling about how much this is going to impact his draft stock. I think it would be foolish to say that nobody in the NFL would make a second thought about drafting a gay player, not because of the gay player, but because of the reaction it might engender in the locker room.
Too much of a distraction?
Distractions or maybe fear that the culture within that particular locker room may be more homophobic, that would create problems as far as team camaraderie and so forth. But I think in teams that have very strong leadership or that have a very strong positive culture, I think those teams will not think twice about it at this point. I'm hoping that's the case. They will look at him and say, all right, we think this guy can fit in this round. He can do this for our team. We're going to draft him based on his ability.
And that's all that matters. Yeah. What's interesting to me is so much of the change in the culture in the United States, in the way we approach gay rights, has come from young people. And here we have the same thing in sports. Yep. The NFL and a lot of major sports have been a little bit behind the curve, I think, and to have a young person be the one to step up and say, hey, I'm going to live my truth, it's interesting.
Yeah, it was powerful for him to say that he wanted to get the story out because he wanted to tell the story. He didn't want somebody else telling his story, very commendable for him, for Michael Sam to do this. I will also say that one of my favorite lines in the coverage since this came out yesterday was sort of an Onion-esque headline that, you know, gay man declares for the job force. All right, that's not a headline anywhere,
right,
but in the NFL it is. And that, right, it does tell you that there is a gap, that the NFL and professional sports in general have lagged behind where the rest of society really, or where most of society really is right now.
We definitely need to talk about the Olympics, the Winter Games underway in Sochi, and America's doing pretty well so far.
Not bad. I think the big disappointment so far has been Bodie Miller. He looked like he was going to just dominate in the downhill. He had the fastest times two of the 3 days in practice and warm-ups, but he failed to medal. He finished eighth. Very disappointing. He'll have one more chance in the super combined, but that was going to be his moment at 36 years of age. This is probably his last Olympics. You wouldn't think he'd be able to compete. If you don't want to know what happened today and you want to wait for the TV, hit mute for a moment because I'm going to make one point. Julia Mancuso, Did win bronze this morning or today in Sochi. So that brings the U.S. medal haul now up to five. And I will make the point that we love looking at a scoreboard in American sports. I'm not sure that this is a fair scoreboard to look at, you know, total medals. But Norway is leading the way with seven. The United States next with five total medals so far through a couple of days of competition.
And social media playing a big role in these games.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. One of the gold medal winners is Jamie Anderson, who won the women's slope-style snowboarding competition. Before the Olympics, she had about 2,000 Twitter followers. At the time where after she had won it, but before it had been televised, she had about 24,000 Twitter followers. I just checked. She now is up over 34,000 Twitter followers.
That's crazy.
Which really shows
crazy.
You how much more interest there are, you know, for people when, yeah, you win a gold medal, people want to know, you know, want to see your selfies and the pictures of your meals.
So let's talk local sports. If you want to celebrate Valentine's Day on the hardwood, we talked about some options for the symphony. If you want to do sports, there's an option for you, too.
JU-UNF playing basketball on Valentine's Day at JU. UNF won the first meeting of the year, 86-82, in front of a UNF record crowd of 5,000 last month. Just the fifth time in 20 games that UNF had beaten JU. JU needs a win in a big way. UNF is fighting for third place in the conference, and tip-off is Friday at the arena at 7 o'clock. And if you want to have local sports before then, or at least locally staged sports, we've got soccer in Jacksonville coming up on Wednesday. The New York Red Bulls, the Philadelphia Union of the MLS, a preseason match at Everbank Field. And tickets are still available there. And, of course, this is just part of a larger picture of soccer growing in Jacksonville.
Yes. And our good friend of the show, Tony Allegretti, will be very glad that you mentioned that.
And I'll also mention it from a soccer standpoint, February the 18th. We will learn the identity of the NASL team name and logo and team colors. And you may have seen some billboards around town that are splashing a little bit of a hint of what the color of the logo might be. And it'll be unveiled on February the 18th.
Very exciting. So we'll look forward to that. And we'll be talking more about soccer on Wednesday on First Coast Connect. Thank you very much for being here, Cole.
Thanks, Karen.